No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome again to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. It's episode 183. We're officially, everyone is in the offseason. The Super Bowl is over. The Philadelphia Eagles are the champions of the world, and their quarterback is the talk of the town here in the Phoenix area. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site. My co-host is Seth Cox, the site editor from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, what a thrilling Super Bowl. We are now officially in the offseason for everyone, and it's the talk is about quarterbacks lately, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more important than a quarterback, and then all of a sudden the Eagles come out of nowhere, win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles as quarterback, and now there's even more questions. Like, how heavy do you have to invest in a quarterback? Can you invest in a quarterback like Case Keenum or Nick Foles? I mean, Case Keenum went to the NFC Championship game. Nick Foles is Super Bowl MVP. So how important is it to draft a quarterback earlier? Can you go trade for one or sign a veteran that's maybe not had great success but has had some success and you could pull the most out of them? Oh man, it's the discussions now are plentiful, and at least the discussions now are diverse. It's not just, oh, you have to draft a quarterback in the first round. That's still the heavy opinion, but now you're getting opinions from everywhere about how to obtain a quarterback and what you need in a quarterback. And it's making for a fun offseason.
And that it is indeed with some. Now, the Cardinals have not announced their coaching staff yet, Steph, yet. We've got the coach, the coordinators are official, and then there's names there and about. So we don't have much to say about the coordinators and the position coaches yet. It is believed that five of Bruce Arians' staff is staying on. Four we kind of knew about. The most recent name is that Buddy Morris will be coming back as the strength and conditioning coach. Steve Heiden, who was tight ends coach, will remain, whatever his hasn't been announced what his role will be. It appears that they've also snatched up a tight ends coach, so Heiden probably has a different role. Byron Leftwich, quarterbacks coach, will be quarterbacks coach once again. Larry Foote, still coaching linebackers, he will stick around as well. And wrapped up with Kevin Garber, a receivers assistant who's close to Larry Fitzgerald. We've talked about that before. Then what we know about the coaching staff as well is that it's heavy on the Camp Panthers assistants. Steve Wilks, obviously head coach, comes over if he was defensive coordinator. Al Holcomb, now the defensive coordinator, was linebackers coach there. We've talked about on this show, Ray Brown, offensive line coach over there in Carolina, expected to come over here to coach the offensive line, a great grab. And then most recently, who was an assistant quarterbacks coach and offensive quality control, was Cam Turner over in Carolina, is not coming back to the team and is expected to join the Cardinals staff. And there's a few other names out there. Kirby Wilson, running backs coach, has a great track record. Then you've got a couple other guys that are the defensive backs coach, but nothing to talk about really other than, hey, those are the names that we know about. But this show is dedicated to, it's off season. It's our first real off season show. We're going to talk about the biggest news of the NFL that happened on Thursday. As we're recording on a Thursday, not a Tuesday, so we're a couple of days later, is the contract that the San Francisco 49ers agreed to with Jimmy Garoppolo becomes the richest NFL player in history on a per-year basis. Talk about what that means. We're going to talk about, as we move forward towards free agency, some salary cap moves that the Cardinals could and need to do so that they can attack free agency the way they want to. And then we'll talk about the quarterbacks. suddenly the Cardinals have a bunch of options. We'll go over pros and cons to all of them. So that's what's coming up as we're starting off. Let's talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo now, $137.5 million over 5 years. The unbeaten starter after seven starts in the NFL still hasn't lost a game. Now will average $27.5 million per year. He eclipses the deal that Matthew Stafford signed at 5 years, $135 million. What does this mean? Because I wrote a little bit about this, but what does this mean for the NFC West first and foremost?
Well, it means that if everything works out for San Francisco and if things continue on the trajectory for LA, that the Cardinals are infinitely in a more precarious position than we first assumed. Obviously things went from good to bad the last 2 years, but if the Cardinals are the one team in the NFC West without a franchise type quarterback, it goes from bad to worse, because no matter how you want to paint the NFL, it's still a quarterback driven league. Now how you obtain that quarterback, their you know, skill set level, that's all debatable, but you still have to have a quarterback. And at the time of this recording on Thursday, February 8th, 2018, the Cardinals have zero quarterbacks on their roster. So they are by default in a really bad position. Now on the flip side, they didn't pay somebody that's only has seven starts, the biggest per year contract in NFL history. So they have that going for them. Obviously, if Jimmy Garoppolo catapults the 49ers back to the top of the NFC West, nobody cares what his per year contract is. He's underpaid no matter what. I mean, you look at Russell Wilson. Is he worth being the top five quarterback pay-wise in the NFL? Maybe. I mean, it's debatable, but for Seattle, there's no question. I mean, he's probably underpaid based on what he does for Seattle. So each case is unique to an NFL, but they are in the worst spot as of, again, February 8th. They are in the worst spot in the NFC West simply because they have nothing at quarterback, and we don't know which way they're going.
Yeah, and that's on top of that, so aside from what this means for the Cardinals is the fact that they are the only team that doesn't have a long-term answer at the position. Seattle's got Russell Wilson. The Rams have Jared Goff, who looked great last year. Then you add Jimmy Garoppolo to the mix. Now, unproven he is. However, there is no one who can – you can't deny the impact he had both on and off the field for that team. Not only did he play solid while on the field, he also did what Bruce Arians really loves in his quarterbacks. He galvanized a locker room. He walked right in and became a leader when he had two NFL starts. And he basically took command of the locker room. It was Jimmy Garoppolo's team from that point forward. That's what Carson Palmer did after he had a decade in the league. He comes into the Cardinals locker room and he immediately commanded respect. Garoppolo sort of fixed whatever ailed the 49ers quickly. Now, what this now does is it makes the situation for the Cardinals, as whether or not they fix their quarterback position moving forward, is that now they find themselves in a very difficult division in terms of talent, assuming that Garoppolo is going to be at least as good as he was in his, you know, his five starts a year ago. And that would be, they have to play Russell Wilson twice a year, Jared Goff twice a year, and now Jimmy Garoppolo twice a year. That's six games every year where you're playing very talented.
Talented, yeah.
Very talented quarterback. You're playing. And then, of course, the other thing, and I wrote an article about this on Thursday afternoon, is, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo got the got the contract, but what does it mean for the Cardinals? It affects the Cardinals in a lot of ways, because aside from having to play him, it sort of sets the baseline for quality quarterbacks moving forward. And the number one guy that we're going to talk about a little later in the show is Kirk Cousins. If Jimmy Garoppolo gets $27.5 million per year, who has seven NFL starts to his name, Kirk Cousins, who has three consecutive years of 4,000 yards passing each year, completing 65% of his passes, with no less than 25 touchdown passes per year and no more than 13 interceptions in any season of the last three. And he's the best quarterback on the market. Now, it's amazing the fact that he is available on the market, but that makes the Cardinals situation very – they're going to have to pay him. If they're going to get him, they're going to go all in for Cousins, it's going to cost them all their money, and because they're going to be competing with four or five, maybe six other teams for his services.
Well, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when we recorded it, the Alex Smith deal set everything in motion, and I had guesstimated that whoever he went to, because he had 1 year, $18 million left on his contract, it was going to be a four-year, $80 million contract that you were going to have to pay him, probably, you know, 50, 60 guaranteed. And then that got blown out of the water, and it was $94.5 million or whatever it was, $23 million a year. And I know it's funny money, but $71 million guaranteed for Alex Smith. You're going to have to – I mean, that set the precedent that – 23, 24 wasn't going to get it done for Kirk Cousins. So now you're looking, okay, can you get by with 25, 26 for Cousins?
Nope.
And then San Francisco says, here you go, $27.5 million, Jimmy. And you're going, what is going on?
Then now you're minimum talking, 28. I would not be surprised if he hits 30. I mean, we're going to see a $30 million a year contract this offseason or next offseason. Guaranteed is going to happen to a quarterback.
Right. And so now the Cardinals were tentative players at $24 million. I mean, and we're talking tentative because, as Jess said, they're in a group of five to six other teams. And they were players at $24 million because they could fudge some things. They could throw big guarantees in year two and three that maybe other teams would have to spread out. I mean, again, you can make the books work to get them there, but now we're talking another $5 to $6 million a year. And again, you can make the money work, but I mean, we're talking at this point, Cardinals just a hair under $23 million, just a hair. You cut Mike Iupati, you cut Jared Valdir, and probably Dale Buchanan, and now you're in a position where you can pay Kirk Cousins, but now you have to fill those spots. I mean, it's not like you can just cut guys and then sign Kirk Cousins. You have to cut guys that are starters right now in a very light shade of pencil, but they're starters right now on your roster, and you have to replace those players. So it's not a cut and dry, oh, you know, cut Tyrann Mathieu and Mike Iupati, and you go give them, you know, the money you save. Well, no, that's not how it works, because you still have to replace those players. You still have to find two other offensive linemen. You still have to find another linebacker. You still have to find another cornerback. I mean, you're still in the market for these things. And, oh, by the way, we didn't even touch about maybe the worst group in the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals wide receivers. And so, yeah, I mean – they're still in on Kirk Cousins, but it went from maybe a 10% chance to like a 2% chance now, because the money, it they can make it work. I mean, there's zero doubt in my mind they can make it work, but it's going to have to be some really funny accounting to get the job done, especially in year one.
And so clearly the Garoppolo contract is something that will make waves throughout the NFL. And to think, if he turns into that franchise quarterback that it appeared that New England believed he could be, and now San Francisco believes, that they just gave up a second-round pick for him, which is less than what the Cardinals gave up for Chandler Jones. Because they had to, well, it's basically the same thing, but they gave up one of their first rounders to get him as well. So, yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo's deal, feel the effects will be felt for years to come. Not only this offseason for the Cardinals, but the entire league moving forward as guys like Aaron Rodgers, well, Drew Brees, who needs a new contract this offseason, Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers are coming up. They salary cap's going up, so it's I get why the 49ers did it. And if he's as good as they believe he is, it'll be worth every penny. But the effect on other teams. Coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're gonna talk about salary-saving moves that the Cardinals can do. So where can the Cardinals make up some money? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red.
I received my first shipment of Wink wine for Super Bowl Sunday, and it was everything I could have asked for and more. 5 bottles of delicious and diverse wine for my Super Bowl Sunday party, and my guests loved them. Wink, that's W-I-N-C, is the wine club for you. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. How? Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, then shipped right to your door. And that's all starting at just $13 a bottle. We ordered 5 bottles of wine for the Super Bowl. We opened 3 and we just had a nice wine tasting. Everybody tried different things, wrote down scores, and decided what they liked and didn't like. It's the best way to try different wines, explore your taste, and figure out what type of wine you like to drink. It's something that you don't get to do when you go to the store because it's a little intimidating to standing in front of those wine sections. That's why Wink Wine is the best way to get your wine delivered to you, and it gives you a great selection and diverse options. Shipping is covered, and best of all, if you don't like any of the bottles they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/cred. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywinc.com/cred for $20 off. trywink.com/SEERED.
We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and as we hit this part of the offseason, beginning with this week, was when teams can officially start making releases. They can actually cut people, giving them that, you know, that kind of month before the new league year, so they can avoid paying, you know, roster bonuses or making contracts guaranteed. And so we know what the Cardinals have right now, according to overthecap.com, as of Thursday night, with Carson Palmer's contract coming off the book because they officially moved him to the reserve retired list. They have $22.7 million in cap space. That'll go up or down a little. That'll go up a little bit based on the unused cap from this last year. It was reported that they're going to cut Adrian Peterson, so you're looking at about another $3 million. So you're looking at about roughly $26 million in cap space right now if they do nothing else. What else can the Cardinals do? Well, let's assume for this exercise that Larry Fitzgerald is returning. It is my belief that he is returning. If he were going to retire, I think he would have made the announcement already. If there's a report out saying, you know, from one of the local guys here, he says he's coming back. He's just waiting for the right time to announce it. So he's coming back. So those $11 million that could be off the books will still be on the books. Where can the Cardinals make up some money? What can they do to gain some salary cap space?
Well, we've already been told that Antoine Bethea is going to remain on the roster. It was a weird story that came out. What was that, Wednesday?
They're picking up his contract. Like it was technically all NFL contracts are options, but
yeah,
he signed a 3-year deal.
Right. And so, you know, when you look at the big names, when you look at the big money, there's the first kind of guy that jumps out at you is Buchanan, Deion Buchanan. And people might say, well, that's a dumb move to make. And again, I'm not saying this is what they should do. I'm not saying they should. But what when you're talking about the biggest financial flexibility it'll provide you, Deion Buchanan's the top guy at $8.7 million with no dead money cap. So they cut Buchanan. All of a sudden they're, you know, like you said, once all the numbers come up with Adrian Peterson and Carson Palmer's deals.
Buchanan alone would be about 35. So 35 no Peterson, no Buchanan, it'd be about 35 million, which is you could do a lot with that. Now the problem is now you took their most talented linebacker. Off the, yeah. I mean, he's now not on the team. And with the staff that they have, with the defense that we believe we're going to see, you're going to want a guy like Buchanan on the field, because we saw in 2015 the Thomas Davis numbers that he put up, the Thomas Davis type impact that he had in 2015. And now he has the coaches that coach Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly. So he's the guy you want to keep around. So, you know, I wrote a study, it was about a month ago. So these are the biggest salary cap gain that they can make is Patrick Peterson. It would save him nearly $10 million against the cap, but obviously that's never happening. You can't find anyone to replace him.
Right. So, even more technically, the biggest one is Fitz, but
yeah. But for this exercise, we've already assumed he's coming back.
Yeah, but and something odd, and again, we're recording on Thursday, but his contract is guaranteed when this posts. So as of 2/9/2018, if he decides to play, it doesn't matter. He's playing, because the Cardinals will get zero salary cap relief. They will literally have to cut Larry Fitzgerald as of the recording of this episode. And actually, it might be too late in the next 5 minutes, because I think it goes into the Eastern time zone. And, you know, but so like Jess said, we don't even have to use our imagination, because Fitz is on the roster unless he retires. So they owe him nothing. They can't gain anything back from him. he's in the money at this point.
So the name that everyone's going to talk about, and that's Tyrann Mathieu. There are whisperings, discussions, chatter among media members who have some inside access that believe that Mathieu will be cut. Now, he does not provide great salary savings in 2018. It will save the Cardinals $4.8 million against the cap, but they will carry more than $9 million in dead money. But it would not be so much about this year as is for next year, because if he's on the roster, if the Cardinals don't cut him, then it kicks in about another $19 million in guarantees for the next 2 years. So if they don't cut him, you are saying, okay, Ty, you're our guy for at least the next 2 seasons. Now, his play later in the year was good. Steve Keim said it was great timing on how that went. If they see that, and he played all 16 games, he was Pro Bowl. He was Pro Bowl alternate. He would have gone to the Pro Bowl had he not planned a birthday party for his kid. So obviously, and you know, he's been kind of one of the faces of the team for some time. So cutting him would have some repercussions within and without the locker room. But $4.8 million that you save this year and another gazillion in 2019, especially when you have Tyrann Mathieu's replacement on the roster in the name of Buda Baker, who is, you know, bigger, faster,
and cheaper.
And was in his first game was putting up numbers that nobody on the team was producing.
Right. And the thing is, and I wrote about this, if you're cutting Mathieu, you're 100% not doing it for this year. I mean, there's no argument that you're doing it for this year, because the dead money is just astronomical. You're talking about $9.5 million in dead cap space for five, you know, under $5 million in cap savings. That doesn't make any sense, but it does make sense, you know, and you know, Jess and I use this personally. Overthecap.com has like a salary calculator, so you can go in and play around with it. But if you click the Tyron Mathieu button, so you have nobody else cut, and you just, you know, cut Tyron Mathieu, the Cardinals cap space goes from the number we talked about earlier, you know, 25.6 million dollars. You click Tyron Mathieu, it only goes up to 30.4. I mean, it's not. The savings is negligible, but you pay attention to 2019. It goes from 103.7 million to 117.8 million. So you're 100%, if you're cutting him, you're doing this for 2019. I mean, and those numbers go down the line. I mean, we're talking 14 million a year for the next 2 years. So 19 and 20 seasons. My argument has been, it doesn't make sense to cut Mathieu if all you're trying to do is save money for 2019, because you're basically going to be in the same spot again next year, where if you cut him, you're going to save about $7-8 million, and you're going to have dead cap of that 8 million or whatever, or 5-6 million, whatever's guaranteed from this year. So that's my biggest argument against it, is if you need 4.8 million, are you going to get a player that has the impact? Cause that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about 9 million. We're not talking about 14 million. We're talking about 4.8 million. So is the player that in this year, this singular year that you're replacing Tyron Mathieu at that 4.8 million, is he going to make the difference? And if it's not Kirk Cousins, and let's just even throw out another name, if it's not Drew Brees, and Drew Brees is never coming here, but if it's not Kirk Cousins or Drew Brees, I don't know if you can tell me that somebody else is going to come in here and have the same impact for 4.8 million. And when you look at their salary cap for next year, again, that 104 number is going to go down. It will, because they're going to have guys sign for multiple years. But even if you're talking, it goes down 30 million and they're at 75 million, is there not going to be a way to create another 14 million next year? No, there will be. And so I understand the argument. I really do. But with the way his salary is structured, I just don't see the benefit of this season making that move with already so much change going on. Because the bigger thing is, in 2019, you literally have 17 players under contract. So if you cut Tyron Mathieu, and again, this number is going to go up, but you know, it's kind of crazy to look at. 2018, they technically have 49 players under contract right now. So in 2019, they're losing 32 players to free agency in 2019. So again, do you want to take that number down to 16 guys under contract for 2019? Again, that number is going to go up. But I mean, it just doesn't make enough sense for the negligible cap savings, unless it's that final piece to get to pay the 28 to $30 million quarterback tax that you're going to have to pay.
The next guy that makes, and I think you probably won't get any argument from probably anyone, the one other salary move that I think is inevitable would be guard Mike Iupati, who will, you know, he's dealt with injuries the last couple of years, and he's now entering his 30s. And cutting him would save $6.3 million. Yes, it'd be $3.4 million in dead money, but it's inefficient. It's a much more efficient gain of salary cap space,
especially for this year.
Yes. And, of course, the thing with Iupati is it sounds like they're going to be going after guards in free agency anyway, whether that's bringing back an Alex Boone or going after Norwell, who is going to be the the desired guard in free agency.
And the highest paid guard in probably the NFL.
Yes, yes. So he will be a rich, rich man. But there's names out there. So Iupati makes sense. And I think we can say that, okay, he's going to be gone now. So you're going to be looking at a little more than $30 million in cap space. So even if Kirk Cousins is the target, so then you get him under contract. You probably can get his cap number somewhere. If you know, it's 28 million on average, 28 and a half, 29. You probably can keep that cap number down in year one to what, 22 million probably, depending on how they work the salary and the signing bonus and things like that. Then you're still left with about $10 million to play with in free agency. It's not a lot, but if you're going out and getting a quarterback, like the top quarterback, he is the crown of your free agency, and then everything else is kind of scraps anyway.
Yeah, and when you look at Iupati, it makes sense because, as you said, they can kind of go in-house, and I know he's not in-house technically, but you can grab an Alex Boone for, you know, a decent salary, you know, maybe a two-year salary, probably $4-4.5 million a year. And I think you can look at that and people will go, well, is he really worth that? But I mean, he's a veteran guard. He's gonna command some money. And so when you look at that number, you're basically going to be able to take Iupati and replace him and save, you know, call it $2 million just for easy math. And so you're going to save $2 million. So yeah, you're not going to be up at that, you know, almost 32 number that we talked about, but you're definitely going to be above that 25 number that we just talked about and have a guard in place to start. And I think that makes sense. The next guy, and that here's the thing, Jess, and this is one of the craziest things about all the Cardinals contracts, right? Is there's really not any good, like, guys that you look at and you go, yeah, that's an easy cut. I mean, Iupati's probably the easiest one when you're talking about from a financial savings standpoint, because again, outside of Deion Buchanan, you're talking, you're either going to cut somebody that has value in terms of starting, or you're not going to get as much as you're expecting. And the next guy on the list that everybody's going to talk about is Jared Valdir. Jared Valdir is nearly $7 million in cap space if you cut him, but he really turned it on at the end of the season. And if you're cutting Mike Iupati and Jared Valdir, your offensive line has a lot more question marks than you've had probably in the last 3 years.
And they've had lots of question marks each of the last few years. And that Valdir is a very interesting case because you look at that caps number of 10.1 million and you look at, you're like, is that really what you want in your right tackle? And luckily, because he's still into the rookie deal, so DJ Humphreys is going to come in at $2.8 million. So between the two of them, you're looking at about a $13 million cap between your two tackles, which actually is pretty reasonable. The problem is you don't have a starting right tackle on your roster behind Valdir unless you know, Will Holden, he can fill in. And even it was said, one of the local reporters said, they didn't draft Will Holden to be a starter. They drafted him to be a backup. That's what they said. They drafted him to be a backup. John Wetzel, he's capable. I think he's a guy that you want on your bench. So if you cut Jared Valdir, you are saying we're finding our starter somewhere else, which might be dicey, because if you get a decent one, he might cost you at least as much. Now, maybe you get younger and maybe a little better for the right side, but more than likely, you're paying more money to someone to play the same position. That's how offensive line salaries are going.
It is. And so here comes the question. And we saw this on Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't remember what day of the week his mock came off, but Todd McShay of ESPN.com mocked giant, mammoth, gargantuan Orlando Brown Jr. of Oklahoma to the Arizona Cardinals. So, you know, let's just play follow the lead here. And so obviously Humphreys is your left tackle. You draft Orlando Brown, you plug him in at right tackle. Okay, now you can cut Jared Valdir, but we're talking May by then, right? And so
right. And so you lose the whole benefit of cutting him to begin with.
Right. So all the impact free agents, all the big names, the quarterbacks obviously, but then, you know, like we hit on the wide receivers, that they need a wide receiver, whether they bring back John Brown or Jerron Brown or whatever, they have to bring in a wide receiver. I mean, there's no question at this point. You can't go into the year with Larry Fitzgerald, Chad Williams, and JJ Nelson as your wide receivers. It can't happen. And so, you know, you're going to sign a wide receiver. You probably need a tight end because of Jermaine Gresham's injury. And a guy that I've seen people say cut, well, if you cut Jermaine Gresham, you actually owe him almost $3 million. So long story short, you're not cutting Jermaine Gresham. So, you know, that again, it would be all well and good if you could draft Orlando Brown at the end of February and then free agency started. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, this works out. But you can't cut Jared Valdir without a plan in place. And you don't want to get into the draft going, all right, we'll take Orlando Brown or Mike McGlinchey, just throwing out two names that are being buzzed about first round tackles. And you go in with that mentality, and then you watch both those guys go in the first 14 picks. And then you're sitting there at 15 going, okay, well, I guess we draft Levi Brown because we got to draft the tackle. I mean, that's what happened with the Cardinals when they drafted Levi Brown fifth overall in 2008 or seven, whenever it was. And so you can't have that happen again. So again, you cut Valdir, as Jess said, you're probably going to be paying for equal quality, $7 million. I mean, maybe you take a flyer on like an often injured guy, and I don't even have the free agents in front of me, so I don't know who's available. Maybe you take a flyer on an often injured or an older guy on a 1-year deal, and you hope that works out. But cutting Valdir does a lot for your cap space, and it does nothing for your roster. It's the opposite of, you know, it's the opposite problem with Tyrann Mathieu. You don't really gain anything, and you're not sure if you're ready to move on from Mathieu on your roster. Well, Valdir, you're going to gain something. You're going to gain about $7 million in cap space, but you definitely don't have anything on your roster at this point to replace him.
You look at some other places you could gain some cap space. Now, Bethea's not going to get cut. He would save more than $3.5 million. A couple other names that might make sense. Phil Dawson, $3 million in cap space you'd free up. But he kicked well down the stretch. A good kicker you kind of always need. Josh Morrow, you could save $2.8 million. But
Morrow is the interesting one. Because that's he's not a bad player. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but that's a pretty big number for that guy, right? Like
it is.
That when I saw that going over everything, I was like, wow, that's actually a bigger number than I had expected from him.
But he is valuable in terms of versatility because he can play inside and out. He will fit really well playing the defensive end, that bigger defensive end position in a 4-3, because he played basically D end outside linebacker ish thing in some nickel packages. So he would fit right in right there. He dealt with an ankle the last half of the season, but his versatility, he's very smart. He's a good guy to have on the roster. And here's also the thing. Depending on what they have left, Frosty Worker's probably retiring. That would leave Corey Peters as the only veteran in that room. And
by the way, if I'm not saying anybody would say this, but you know, I know they just extended Corey Peters, and people might say, "Oh, cut him," because
they would save $480,000.
Yeah, you're literally saving nothing. So there is always a chance a guy gets cut. I'm not going to say there's no way, but there's no way you're cutting Corey Peters. I mean, just spelled out the the roster reasons, but there's just no way that you can cut a guy that you're only going to save $500,000 on. Again, we talk about negligible cuts. You can't, you still have to fill the team, and you can't just go down the line and just start cutting guys.
The other guy that it could, because he was a Bruce Arians guy, AQ Shipley at $1.75 million in cap space. He's in the last year of his deal. The team had drafted Evan Bame, but Shipley's basically been the rock of that offensive line for the last two, 3 years, for the last couple of years. So you'd have to take a leap of faith in a young guy like Bame, or have someone in mind already to pet him go. Because Shipley was definitely an Arians guy, definitely a Harold Goodwin guy. We'll see if he is a Ray Brown guy and Steve Wilks guy. But you could save a little money there, not a lot, but it would allow Bame to then move back to center and lean on him for the upcoming season.
And the thing is, at this point, you really have to hope, and that's, I hate using that word, but you really have to hope that whatever Ray Brown says, because we're talking about Andrew Norwell, right? The guard from Carolina. Well, who developed Andrew Norwell? Ray Brown did. Who developed Trey Turner? Ray Brown did. Who developed, who rekindled Michael Oher's career? Ray Brown did. Who made Matt Khalil not a laughing stock of the NFL? Ray Brown did. So what I'm saying is, you have to hope that Ray Brown has somewhat of a voice in that room when it comes to personnel and things of that nature. And so if he comes in and says, look, I can work with Evan Bame, he can be a solid NFL send this league, make the virtually the board. And especially if you're going to cut Mikey Potty, Andrew Norwell in the building with his signature on the dotted line, you cannot go into 2018 with Evan Bame and two guys, maybe a rookie and Alex Boone as your guards. Like you just can't do it. He's already done that. But Shipley for now, like I said, if Ray Brown comes in and says, look, Evan Bame's my guy, I can get him to work, then I'm 100% on board and I'm there. But and he'll be back in the NFL. So it's a huge win for the Cardinals, but you're going to have to convince me to cut AQ Shipley with the roster constructed as is right now.
Salary cap stuff we've wrapped up. Coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about quarterbacks. This is the stuff that everyone else is talking about. We're talking quarterbacks. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. I've been talking to you guys for weeks now about Harry's.com, about the great shave that I've gotten, the switch I made from the electric razor to Harry's. I've been super pleased with it. There's an aspect about it that I've kind of overlooked because I didn't pay any attention to it. Taking care of in a fundraiser, I was doing it at work. I got to have pies thrown at my face. You know, that's a different story as to why. But they were shaving cream pies, and the shaving cream that they used was the cheapest of cheap shaving cream. And as I'm cleaning up my face, I just noticed that it felt different after my face. So I didn't shave, but washing it off, the effect on my skin was different than the foaming shave gel that I used with Harry's. The foaming shave gel at Harry's is fantastic. It smells great. My wife loves the scent. I like what it does with my skin. It feels great. And then on top of that, you've got the fantastic blades for a great price. You're not going to pay too much. Like I told you before, when it comes to shaving, you guys know what type of options you get. You can pay a lot of money for nice blades, or you can go with the cheap disposable, but they don't give you good shave. Harry's gives you the right balance, so you're getting a great shave at a fair price, and you can do what 3 million other guys have already switched to Harry's. They give you exactly what you need. Nothing extra, just a high quality razor at an amazing price. And the you guys, our listeners, it's a standing offer that we've had for weeks. Still get that offer. You can do the trial save set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/cred. You're going to pay $3 for shipping, but that $3, you're going to $13 value. You're going to get the razor handle with a razor, a 5-blade razor blade. It comes with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade. You're going to get the fantastic lathering shape. Oh, it's wonderful. And you're going to get travel blade cover and all of that value of $13. You pay for shipping for $3, and then you get to test it out. You can do what I did. You can make the switch to Harry's. You get your free trial set. Go to harrys.com/cred right now, unless you're driving. then hold on, and then go to harrys.com/cred. We're back for the final segment of the Rise of the C-Red podcast, and now we're going to talk about quarterbacks. Obviously, this is the topic number one for the Cardinals moving forward because we have no quarterback at all on the roster, but they have a lot of options. We're not going to talk about the draft. That's in the weeks to come. We're going to save that till March, probably the middle of March. We'll have our draft show talking about quarterbacks like we've done the last couple of years. We'll have a show just on quarterbacks. We're going to have a show for offensive skill players in the line. Then we're going to talk about defense, and then we're going to look at mock drafts and all that. But that's not yet because we're still not even at free agency. We're still not even technically a full month away from free agency. So let's talk about the quarterbacks that the Cardinals could acquire beginning in March. Obviously, one domino is on the move with Alex Smith. Will be traded. The trade has been agreed to. Will be on the move to Washington. That means Kirk Cousins is available. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo is signed. He's taken care of. So where do the Cardinals go? And we're going to talk about a few options. And I obviously, number one is Washington's Kirk Cousins. He obviously is, aside from Drew Brees, and I think we're just going to cross him off the list because it would be, there's really no way that he's going to go anywhere else but New Orleans at this point in his career. Kirk Cousins, pros and cons, he's definitely the best quarterback in terms of talent. He's the quarterback that players on the Cardinals mentioned they want there. He's the quarterback that Blake Shelton, country star Blake Shelton, wants to come to the Cardinals. 4,000 yards passing each of the last 3 years, no fewer than 25 touchdown passes, no greater than 13 interceptions, completing at least nearly 65% of his passes every year, and that's the low end, completing nearly 70 in two of those seasons. He's taken the Redskins to the playoffs, and he still performed at a high level last year when his skill players were basically all taken away. Problem is pay. For me, I like the notion, don't like the pay. But should he be the guy the Cardinals go after? I mean, if at the end of the day you want to get the best quarterback, because the best quarterback is going to get you the best chance to win a championship, isn't he the guy to get?
If the Cardinals were drafting earlier, I would say no. But they're in a precarious spot again where they're primed to get traded in front of if a quarterback begins to fall. Let's say Baker Mayfield makes it to 12. That's prime real estate for somebody to trade up, right? I mean, we saw it last year. That's where it happens. That's where a team that's good sits and waits, or a team that's, you know, close sits and waits for a number one and then a future number one. And so when you look at that and you go, okay, can the Cardinals sit and wait at 15? And you say, okay, well, what's in the free agent market? And you have a guy that is the definition of franchise quarterback from a statistical outlook. There's no question. You hit it out of the park with your introduction of Kirk Cousins, who he is as a player. The question you always have is, can you invest 30% or whatever the number is of your salary cap space, or, you know, sorry, 20% of your salary cap space into one player, not one position, one player, Can you do that? And I don't know if the answer is yes, especially with the question marks on the offensive line and at wide receiver. Because if you draft Cousins, or sorry, sign Cousins, you're basically saying I'm out on the maybe a combination of Andrew Norwell and Jarvis Landry. Let's just throw big names out there people are familiar with. You could probably get both of those guys for less than what you're going to pay Cousins. So that's the question you have to ask yourself. Am I willing to give up any shot at those guys in 2018, bring in Cousins, know that we're going to be similar to Washington in 2018? Obviously a better rushing attack, but light on weapons, especially veteran weapons, and questions along the offensive line, and hope that 2019 you can be very aggressive in free agency. So it becomes a two-year plan at that point, right? Like if you bring in Cousins, if you go all in, because you're going all in if you're giving Kirk Cousins, you know, a five-year, $150 million contract, you're going all in. The question is how quickly you can revamp the offensive line and wide receivers. And we know for a fact it will not be done through free agency if you sign Cousins. So the question then becomes how fast does a James Washington, again, just throwing out names, James Washington develop? How fast does an Orlando Brown, if you get an offensive lineman, develop? Or, you know, do you wait till 2019 and then, you know, splurge again while you still have most of your defense under contract, splurge again on then maybe a guard, I don't even know any names, or a wide receiver in free agency and hope that Chad Williams has developed by that time. Those are the questions, and that's the foresight you have to have. Those are all the questions on Cousins. Now, my answer is he would be my first option simply because the options that we're going to talk about a little later, there's much more questions involved and there's going to be some hoping involved with them. Whereas with Cousins, you're getting a top 12 quarterback in the NFL. There's not a question about that. And he's done it with bad players around him, not good players. He's done it with bad players around him. Now, that offensive line last year was very talented, but this year they were heavily, heavily injured. I think they had the most lineup combinations in the NFL in 2017, and their wide receivers were raw and often injured. Terrell Pryor was a bust. You know, the rookie they drafted out of TCU finally got some burn this year, and he played okay. Their best receiver was, I think, a day three pick from a couple years ago in Jamison Crowder. So you're talking about, you know, a team that really didn't have the weapons to maximize Cousins. And so you already know what that could look like if that is the Arizona Cardinals in 2018. And quite frankly, again, if you sign Cousins, that's probably what you're going to, the rosters are going to kind of be similar to what Washington looked like in 2018. Sans the fact that you have David Johnson, which is a big trump card.
For me, I like the idea that here's the thing. I will have no objection to them signing Kirk Cousins because he's a good quarterback. But what it requires, then when you sign Kirk Cousins, you then have to have everything else go right. You need players to stay healthy. Key players have to be healthy. Players who haven't developed must develop. That means Chad Williams needs to be a contributor this year. That means Robert Kimdichie needs to be good this year. It means Evan Bain needs to be able to step up into a role and be a starter potentially this year. And you have to hit it out of the park in the draft. You have to have contributors from your draft this year, because if you can't afford to get any other free agents, that's relying on the players on your roster, and that's relying on being able to draft well and to be able to find bargain deals. And as we've seen, Cardinals just have not been fortunate when it comes to injuries, and they have not had early contributors when it comes to the draft. And there's still some question as to the development of many of their players. So That's a lot to rely on. However, it does answer the question at the most important position on the team. So there's that.
Well, and it answers the question for, in theory, 5 years. I mean, obviously injury changes everything, but it answers the question for 5 years. It doesn't answer the question for one or two. It answers that question for the next 5 years. And honestly, he's 29. I think he'll be 30 when the season starts or ends. I can't remember technically, but you know, you look at it, he'll be 35 when the contract's up, signing a 5-year deal. You can still look at it and go, okay, if he plays well, you're probably going to want to sign him a la Alex Smith, Carson Palmer for another 3 years, you know, $60, $75 million at that point and keep him around. So again, this is everything works out. Everything's wonderful. You know, all of everything is great. This is that scenario. And like you said, it's putting a lot on a single player, but you're doing it at the most important position in sports. And so it's not like you're investing in nothing. You're investing in a known commodity. You're just putting a lot of capital into that one known quantity. And you're hoping that everything around him improves, or, you know, for purposes of David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, guys that are quality already, that they remain at the same level.
The next name that has quickly and almost immediately been thrown to the forefront is the Super Bowl MVP, Nick Foles, who was only playing in the playoffs because Carson Wentz tore his ACL. Now, Nick Foles is under contract still with the Eagles, and it does not necessarily mean it isn't necessarily even a good idea for Philadelphia to trade him because Carson Wentz tore his ACL in December. So it's very likely that Foles would be their starter for the first month, maybe two of the year, before Wentz can come back. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's had an up and down career, but he suddenly is a player that teams are talking about. Teams who need a quarterback are suddenly saying, hey, Nick Foles might be the answer. He's another young guy. I've never been a Nick Foles fan. Part of that's probably because of my disdain for the school he attended in college. But I convinced myself that he is a valid option because of all the guys, aside from Cousins, you look at the ceiling he's had, because he doesn't have just a 5-game stretch, like 5 good games or 7 games like Jimmy Garoppolo. He has an entire season playing at perhaps one of the greatest quarterback seasons in 2014, when he threw 27 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions, and that was only in 10 starts, 13 games, 10 starts. He played pretty pedestrian the next year, and then with the Rams was bad, but that's the Rams. You can kind of forgive that, especially when he was put back in the starting lineup. And after a couple of games, those final 3 games, he played, and especially the last 2 games, he's playing against the Minnesota Vikings defense, and then they're going in the Super Bowl, the biggest stage he plays at the biggest. So you've got super high ceiling. You've seen an entire season of it. You've seen that was a few years ago, and then you see it again in the playoffs. So you know what the potential is. And so I wrote about this. I now have convinced myself that if somehow Philadelphia would give him up for a 3rd-round pick, I think that's a no-brainer. He's young, so he could be the long-term answer. He's under contract for about $7 million next year. And for a 3rd-round pick, you get a starter for at least a year. It might hit the ball out of the park, and he might turn into the quarterback that he was under that first season of Chip Kelly, or even what he was over the playoffs. At worst, if it doesn't work out, you only gave up one of your 2 3rd-round picks, because they're going to have a compensatory pick. You only gave up one of your 3rd-round picks, and you can still draft a quarterback in the 1st round if that's what you want, or still draft someone else, or you start over again next year, but you got a year and you don't feel bad. 2nd-round pick, I'm a little more hesitant, but a 3rd-round pick, I do that in a heartbeat. I think he checks off all the boxes. you see he's got you'll see what he did in the years that he's played well, and you see there's no hole in his game. There's no deficiency. It's just a matter of putting it together. And I think with a guy like Mike McCoy, who will adjust his offense to the skills of his players, he could be successful here, as much as it would pay me to have an Arizona Wildcat on the Cardinals being a starting quarterback.
Well, and when you look at it, one of our writers at Revenge of the Birds wrote an interesting article in saying that he would understand if the Cardinals gave up their first round pick for Foles. And at first blush, that's like, that's crazy. Why would you think that? And then you look at it and you go, well, let's be completely fair. The Cardinals haven't exactly drafted well in the first round under Steve Keim. They have no answer at quarterback right now. And if you're going to trade up for an unproven commodity, a la, let's just throw out a name, Sam Darnold, and get into the top five, say you get to that second Cleveland pick at four, get a quarterback, you're giving more than 50, because you'd be giving up a 2019 first round pick, and going from 15 to 4 even cost them this year's second round pick. So you'd be giving up 29 or 2018 first and second and 2019 first. Ooh. To move up to draft him. So are you willing to bet that much that Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, God forbid Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield are that much better than Nick Foles? I mean, we're not talking about a first round pick. A first round pick you can sell me on, but we're talking about two first round picks and a second round pick. That's what you're going to invest in a rookie quarterback. So you look at that, and then you hit the other point that is semi lost on a lot of people. It doesn't really behoove the Eagles to trade him. So, you know, when you bring up a third round pick, that sounds all well and good for you and I.
Right.
Of course, we're gonna make that deal. But the Eagles don't really have to trade him. He's not under contract after 2019. He has or after 2018 season, he becomes a free agent in 2019. This is and by the way, I looked this up. I thought that was just with the Eagles. Apparently it's with every NFL team.
Voidable years. I don't think it was meant to be a way to keep him in Philadelphia. I think all it was a cap move. They've created two fake years.
So he is technically you're trading for him for one season. And again, when you look at it from a big perspective, the Eagles are going to get a third round compensatory pick for him if they just let him walk.
The downside that is in 2020, it would be. So.
Right, exactly. So it'd be 2 years out or a year out, another year out. But yeah, so that again, you're looking at it and going, oh man, so we're going to have to sweeten the pot. And then all of a sudden you start hearing these rumors that maybe team X, Y, and Z would give up a two. And so you go, okay, well, the Cardinals second round pick isn't exactly as good as, well, again, we'll throw out a team, the Broncos second round pick, right? Like we're talking about a big difference. So you're going to have to entice again. The bigger issue for me in any situation where you're trading for Nick Foles, whether it's a one or a seven, is what comes next. And that is probably what, a 4 year, $60 million contract, 5 years, 75. I mean, are you going to get out for under $15 million a year? Are you going to get out for under $20 million a year for Nick Foles? That's my concern. That's my question. It's not the compensation to get Nick Foles. It's the compensation to keep Nick Foles. Because if you had those two additional years at a very cost-controlled rate, that is a – I mean, I'm not a Nick Foles fan. I'm kind of like you. I can't believe I'm saying this, but give me Nick Foles for 15 right now. If you have Nick Foles for 2018, 2019, and 2020 at a very reasonable rate, that's gold, because that allows you at least two seasons to find the guy. but you're not getting that. You're getting Nick Foles, and then you're paying Nick Foles. And you're probably going to end up paying Nick Foles close to Alex Smith money. And that's just, that is so hard for me. I mean, I don't know if I want to sign Kirk Cousins at $28 million a year, and you're telling me I might have to sign Nick Foles at $20 million a year and give up a first-round pick? That's like a punch to the gut.
Now, here's some perspective that would give credence to the idea of trading like a second round or even a first rounder. Think about what it took. Think about all that it took for San Francisco to acquire New England's backup quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, second round pick. And then they're paying him $27.5 million a year for a guy who had started only two NFL games. Nick Foles has started and played at a high level. Now, granted, he played at a not-so-high level and then actually not-so-good level. But if you think about it in terms of what it cost to get Jimmy Garoppolo and what they gave up a second-rounder, then they paid him all the money to acquire Nick Foles, who is now a Super Bowl MVP, has one of the greatest quarterback seasons we've seen in terms of efficiency. Candy's a backup quarterback. Well, I guess a second-round pick makes sense. But, again, New England was sort of compelled to trade him at that point, it seemed, based on everything that we know, and Philadelphia is not. So,
well,
yeah, Nick Foles isn't going to be cheap.
And again, it goes back to compensation. A second-round pick may get it done. You're 100% right. A second-round pick may get it done because what will Philadelphia get for Nick Foles? So you can't. It's kind of like why New England traded Chandler Jones. It's why they traded Jamie Collins. It's why they traded Jimmy Garoppolo. They knew they weren't going to be able to keep them from a financial aspect. The Eagles know, barring, you know, heaven forbid, another Carson Wentz injury, they aren't going to be able to keep Nick Foles as their quarterback because it's just going to cost too much. So they have to get at least a second-round pick, at least a second-round pick to make that move, because otherwise they'll just sit back and they'll take a compensatory third-round pick. Yes, it's even it's 2020, but that's – they get Nick Foles, who we can, I assume, safely say is the best backup quarterback in the NFL at a very cost-controlled rate, and they know they're going to get a third-round pick the next year. So – you know, and again, God forbid anything happen to Carson Wentz, you already have your answer in-house. Like, you don't have to go searching all of a sudden. So, you know, again, you brought it up, and I think you nailed it. Like, you have to entice Philly to make this deal. And so, again, it's not the compensation going to Philly that is worrisome to me. I don't care. Trade 15. That doesn't matter. It's the fact that you're going to have to pay Nick Foles $20 million. I'm laughing saying this. $20 million a year, probably, to sign him. Because if you trade Nick Foles, even if it's a third round pick, and then he leaves after a year, you lost that trade. 100%, you lost that trade.
Very true. Now we move on to the next group of quarterbacks, and this is free agent guys. There's even more uncertainty. So here are some names that are out there: Sam Bradford, Case Keenan, Teddy Bridgewater, and to a lesser extent, Josh McCown. Sam Bradford, in terms of ability and talent, probably is at the top of every list, but he comes with major question marks because injuries, knees. Now, he's coming off of a couple of years at $18 million per. He's probably not going to command that much. So as team-friendly as a quarterback contract could be, he could be. But then you'd be relying on a player who has a history of missing time. What Bradford would have been the perfect fit for a Pat Shurmur-led Cardinals. I don't know if that will be the case with Mike McCoy, although I think he would do well. The question is you're going to have to sign him for – you could sign him for a year, probably two, maybe three. It's probably going to have to be a two-year deal. But then you're still going to want to address the quarterback in the draft. But it does bring – he got a big question mark because of his health.
He does, and I put Bradford in the same tier as you would like a Josh McCown. They're guys that you have to get a quarterback in on day one or day two at the latest. Like you can't go into 2018 season with Sam Bradford and then Drew Stanton. I mean, again, who knows? But you can't go into the 2018 with those guys, or you can't go into 2018 with, you know, Sam Bradford and 6th round rookie, right? You have to go in with Sam Bradford or Josh McCown and young guy, Baker Mayfield, Kyle LaLotta, you know, somebody that has some juice in them that could get the fan base excited. And the reason why is you know, Bradford, again, injury, and McCown's age. But they're still one and the same. You're still only wanting to get 1, maybe 2 years out of them. You're not expecting to get 5, 6, 7 years out of these guys. So that those guys are in that tier. Case Keenum's in a different tier, and I would even put Teddy Bridgewater very, very carefully. Put Teddy Bridgewater in the Keenum, but he may have to go in the McCown and in Bradford because of his knee, because his knee exploded. Like, his knee didn't do, you know, normal things.
Well, and so we don't know if he can play again. We don't know that.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you can put him in Keenum's category. He's a little more talented than Keenum, but you could put him in Bradford's category where he's probably as talented as Bradford, but he's got the same medical concern. But Keenum and Bridgewater, to me, those guys, and those guys give you this 3-year window where you're like, okay, I have to draft back early or at all because I'm successful. And then 2019 is your deciding year. So, you know, maybe you give Bridgewater a 3-year, you know, $45 million, either of those guys, 3 years and $45 million. And now you're like, okay, I have these guys for 2018, 2019, and potentially 2020 if I need be. So I don't have to become serious, barring injury, about a quarterback until 2019. And now this isn't advocating kicking the can down the road or anything like that. What this is that that's how you can group these quarterbacks. You have the 1-year answers in Bradford and McCown, and then you have the maybe the 3-year stop gaps in Keenum and Bridgewater, and both of them could be more. Both of them could be, you know, 5, 6, 7 year guys. Bridgewater, if health, you know, maintains, and Keenum, if he continues to play at the level he played this year. You know, Keenum and Foles are in a similar situation, except Foles won the Super Bowl. So, you know, that's that. And so when you look at those things, that's, I think, I you know, those are both good options. I prefer maybe a Bradford or a McCown, because I think, again, in my mind, that says, okay, I'm going to draft a quarterback on day one. It doesn't mean they will. It just, you know, in my messed up brain, that's what will happen then if they sign one of those guys. Whereas Bridgewater and Keenum, I want to see them and see if they have it still. And maybe I'll draft a guy on day three that can come in and kind of learn and potentially be a long-term backup type guy. But those are how I would view those guys.
And for me, Josh McCown, and here's something that I haven't heard a lot of people say. Josh McCown is every bit an injury concern as Sam Bradford, as Teddy Bridgewater. If you look at his longtime career, he has a lot of times he was backup, but he's never played in 16 games. In fact, last year, aside from the year that he was a starter for 13 games for the Cardinals in 2004, that's the first time he started that many games. He started 13 games last year with the Jets, but he still got hurt. He is not a big framed quarterback. I mean, he's tall, but he's lean, and he's been one to get hurt on a regular basis. What I like about McCown, you signed McCown, yeah, and like you said, that's a big signal saying they're going to be aggressive in the draft to draft one in round one or round two, because McCown probably won't make it through the year. Probably won't. And so you're bridging that gap even before the season is over, and you can turn it over to turn it over to a young quarterback. And if the team is built the way that Steve Wilks wants to do, with a powerful running game and a physical dominant defense, that's exactly what you want a rookie quarterback to be going into. And honestly, that's what Josh McCown needs. And it's probably what Case Keenum needs. And it's probably what all those guys on this list, except for Kirk Cousins, need to flourish.
And even Cousins signing doesn't preclude them from taking a Michael or Mike White from Western Kentucky in round four, right? It doesn't preclude them from taking a Luke Falk on day three. Like, it doesn't preclude them from those guys. It just makes it not a priority. Obviously, I would assume they're not going to draft a guy at 15 if they sign Kirk Cousins, and you're likely not going to take a guy in round two or three. But you could sign a backup that has similar skills to Cousins, and then bring him along as the backup for the entirety of the Cousins ride if you're able to sign him. Then I think there's two guys that are likely to be on the market in some capacity, and that's Brock Osweiler and Tyrod Taylor. And Osweiler, I think, falls into the McCown and Bradford category of, kind of one-year guys that know McCoy. Osweiler clearly knows McCoy's offense. He's not a good quarterback, but he could be McCoy's Drew Stanton. And I think that was beautifully put by you when you wrote that back in the beginning of January, or in the middle of January after the Steve Wilks hire or the McCoy hire, is that makes sense. I mean, the first kind of signing for Keim was Drew Stanton, a quarterback he was comfortable with. It would make sense to do similar with Mike McCoy if Osweiler comes available. Tyrod Taylor is an interesting case because, one, we don't even know if he's going to be available, but if he is, he really kind of relishes that role of game manager that can make big plays with his legs and his arm and take shots down the field. But he's thrived in a run-heavy offense in Buffalo that relies on LeSean McCoy to kind of be the bulk of his offense, and he's done it without really any talent at wide receiver.
That kind of wraps up what we've been talking about with all the quarterbacks, salary cap, Jimmy Garoppolo. We'll be back maybe next week, probably the week after. We're going to talk about some of the offensive needs. We'll kind of break down the rest of the positions as we lead up to free agency. We're going to talk about the needs on each side of the ball, go through each of the positions, what they need to do in the free agency, then talk about another show about the targets we could be looking at, as we've done in years past. And then after free agency, we'll get to talk about the draft. Maybe we'll probably work in some draft stuff before then, because the combine's coming up. Because you'll get to hear a lot more from Seth on that. But that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us on pretty much anywhere you can find. You can find it on, we're featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on CardsWire. You can find some Block Talk Radio on Audible, on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe, get them directly on your devices. Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. You can basically find us anywhere on Twitter and on Facebook. That's Seth Cox from Revenge of Birds. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Go Cardinals. As the Cardinals like to say, rise up Red Sea. We say rise up Sea Red.